Namaste Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate 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 Vasudevaya.
Sri Bhagavanu Vacha.
Sri Bhagavanu Vacha.
Ityetad Brahmana Putra.
Ityetad Brahmana Putra.
Ashutyatma Anusashanam.
Ashutyatma Anusashanam.
Sanandanam Matanuchar.
Sanandanam Matanuchar.
Siddha Gyatvat Mano Gatim.
Siddha Gyatvat Mano Gatim.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Ityetad Brahmana Putra.
Ityetad Brahmana Putra.
Asuchya Atmanus Sashanam.
Asuchya
Sanandanam Anantnarchu.
Sanandanam Anantnarchu.
Siddha Gyatvat Mano Gatim.
Siddha Gyatvat Mano Gatim.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
The Supreme Lord.
The Supreme Lord.
Sri Narayan Rishi.
Sri Narayan Rishi.
Sit.
Sit.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Etat,
etat,
this,
this,
Brahmana,
Brahmana,
of Brahma,
Brahma,
Putra,
Putra,
the sons,
the sons,
Ashutya,
Ashutya,
having heard,
heard,
Atma,
Atma,
about the self,
self,
Anushashanam,
Anushashanam,
instructions,
instructions,
Sanandanam,
Sanandanam,
the sage Sanandana,
Atta,
then, Anarchu, they worshipped, Siddha,
perfectly satisfied,
Gyatva,
understanding,
Atmana, their own, Gatim, what does Gatim mean?
Ultimate.
You looked. Everyone can answer. Say, look first. But everyone knew that already. The gatim, param gatim, means the supreme, the ultimate destination. So, gyatvat mano gatim. They understood gyatva. They knew now, after hearing the prayers of the Vedas, the personified Vedas, the 28 slokas that the different Upanishads stated, the masters of the Upanishadic knowledge that they stated. After hearing this, they could understand actually what the final goal was. Because it is very difficult to know, if one just studies the Vedic literature, what the final conclusion is. It is something like being in school, and those in the second grade, they learn a certain level of mathematics. Perhaps, what do they learn in the second grade? Subtraction, multiplication, maybe not multiplication yet. And they think, oh yes, I've learned this. And this is actually the goal of my mathematical training. But then in the third grade, they understand something else that doesn't negate, doesn't cancel what they learned in the second grade, but it builds upon it and gives further knowledge. So what ultimately, so those on the highest levels of mathematics, they know what actually is the goal of all the previous mathematical training. But until one is on the highest level, one cannot understand what the goal is. So naturally, there will be different arguments amongst persons, mathematicians, the second grade mathematician and the fifth grade mathematician and the primary head of the primary school and secondary school and college graduate and university, all the different mathematicians will say, this, I know it, my teacher said, I understand, this is the most essential point, and this is what we have to achieve. But who is the ultimate mathematician? And this is where the question as to the supreme goal becomes difficult, because no one will ever admit that this one is ultimate. And in the material world, indeed, there is no ultimate on the material level. And therefore, we seek to find out the ultimate spiritual destination, param gatim. We seek something that's not of the material world. We seek the descending knowledge, descending from the spiritual level, and that is called shastra. But yet, there are also different shastras that speak on different levels. Just like there are different mathematical textbooks for each of the different students on their own levels. And if the students, the mathematical students, in the third grade are thinking, well, this isn't very important, really, I should be studying the calculus level and the advanced mathematical level and this and that, then they will not be able to seriously take the lessons that they have to get today. So therefore the Vedic system is just like that. It establishes the faith of the practitioners in the particular level that they are studying in, because otherwise they will not progress, they will not get anywhere at all. At least learn what you have to learn today. So in that sense, even the Shastra doesn't answer the question. Shastra in a general way doesn't answer the question as to what the ultimate conclusion is, because different Shastras are written on different levels. But the great Acharyas have established different gradations of Shastric knowledge, of Shastra. And the topmost of this has been established as the Amala Purana, the Paramhansa Samhita, this very Srimad Bhagavatam that we are so fortunate to hear. Because Dharma Projita Kaitavatra Paramo Nimatsaranam Satam. It is not written on the baby level, actually. It reveals the topmost level, and no projita kaitava. It speaks on a level that cheating, hypocritical religion is disregarded. And what is hypocritical or kaitava dharma, cheating religion? It means that one is worshipping the Supreme Lord in some form or another, regardless of one's conception of the Supreme, one is worshipping the Supreme Lord, but there is no true worship. It is just the same thing. It is selfishness. So it's not true worship of the Supreme Lord, because my main concern is me, or really my only concern is me. So that even if Shastric, even if religious, And the certain sections of the Vedic literatures, of all scriptural literatures, deal with this type of cheating tendencies, the selfish tendencies, and going to the Supreme, to God, to the Ishwara, to the Parameshwar, being very self-centered. But the Bhagavatam is not like that. It is not like that. It is a meditation on the param satyam, on the absolute truth. It is a meditation and a direction to bring us without confusion to our ultimate, not ultimate relationship with the absolute truth. on all its different levels. So therefore, Vedanti tat tatva vigyas tatvam yajnam adayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti sabhyate. And of all the realizations that one can have, or relationships one can have with the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, of the different personal forms of the Lord, then Krishna stu Bhagavan Sayam. That Krishna, he is Bhagavan Sayam. He is the original personality of Godhead. He is the person, the unlimited supreme person from whom all the expansions, powerful, unlimitedly powerful expansions of him proceed. And they themselves are unlimitedly powerful. So how can there be two unlimitedly powerfuls? But this is the nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. That unlimited expansions from him can come. Unlimited avatars come like the waves of the
ocean,
or the Ganga, or the ocean. And still he does not diminish in power. Think about it, that we know that the material world, what is the proportion that is given in the Bhagavatam about the relationship in size between the material sphere, not one universe, but the unlimited material sphere, practically speaking, of, and then to the supreme, the eternal realm. It is 1/4. Okay. So of course we know if the unlimited supreme is truly unlimited and infinite, how are you going to get 1/4 of it? What's 25% of the unlimited? It doesn't exactly work. It's just to give us an idea of how vast, if this material world is so vast, just imagine, just try to consider this eternal realm. And then to make it even more interesting, each of the Vaikuntha planets are, how big? They're infinite in size. And yet there are different Vaikuntha planets. And not only that, to make it still more interesting, the biggest of the unlimited infinite is Golok Vrindavan. Now, try to put that in your... The biggest, the most vast unlimited? Put that into your finite brain and try to crunch the numbers on that. It doesn't work. The computer will break. It will melt. So we're dealing with this in the Bhagavatam. And the Upanishadic texts are reaching this conclusion. They have reached this conclusion about what the ultimate goal is, because this is the very end, practically speaking, of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. After we've heard of the amazing pastimes of the Swatantra entity, this person who is independent, upon whom everything in existence, spiritual, material, upon whom everything in existence and non-existence rests, and because everything is resting on him, and he's unlimitedly powerful, he is the only entity that indeed is independent. And then, yet, although he is independent, he is acting, and he is the only one who acts according to his own free will and his own desires. Everyone else is conditioned. Conditioned means controlled by external forces. We would like to be independent. We long to be independent. But we find ourselves completely controlled at every step. And this is an irony of modern, Prabhupada would always say, so-called civilization. Because people think that they are better off now than they used to be years ago. 50 years ago, 100 years ago, what to speak of 1500 years ago. and they feel they have more power and more, and they can do what they want more. They have more free time. But people don't have more free time, in fact. Everyone is bound so tightly by time. Even in a simple level. Even in a simple level, they are bound, working all day long, 5 days a week, and then coming home and tired, and there's no freedom on those days. So we used to, when we were growing up, everyone would say TGIF. Do they still say that? Yes? Thank God it's Friday. Why? Why don't they say TGIS? Thank God it's Saturday. Because they're saying, because when, by Friday, they're anticipating that tomorrow I'll enjoy. So that's something to look forward to. But when it's Saturday already, they're thinking, oh no, it's Saturday. The weekend's almost over. And I have to go shopping and I have to do this and so many things to do. And then a little bit of time is there. And then Sunday, oh no. And then it's the Monday blues. No life, practically speaking. All the things that you can't do in the week, you have to do on the weekend. You don't have time to do just in maintenance. It's so little actual free time. While in earlier times, that was so primitive, they say, people had so much more time. Before they invented this conception called the job, people had free time. People would live locally. And I know, yeah, they would live locally. They would eat. They wouldn't have to go an hour or whatever to work every day and then come back another hour and then be chained to the office desk all day long. It wasn't like that. And the children would work with their parents. They would grow up strong and secure in that way. So and yet there's one in the devotee community in Saranagati in Vancouver, Canada. The last time I visited there was in 1996 or so. So the one devotee. Not all the devotees were self-sufficient, but one devotee I knew was, and he had one quarter of an acre garden. How big is that? How big is a quarter of an acre garden? It seemed to me, in my remembrance, it was about the size of this temple room. Is that okay? And he grew in the 3 months that was available. Because it's Canada, isn't the warmest place, and it starts snowing in September, and the last frost of the year is probably in the beginning of June, so June, July, August, 3 months. That means 90 days of the year. He grew all the food for the whole year. And what was he doing? He was touching the earth and growing. He worked during the day, and then they learned how to can it and preserve it in different ways. Very, very, very simple. And then the rest of the year, of course, there was a lot of snow on the ground, so they couldn't go and dance some. But they had free time. They owned their little piece of land. They had free time. They didn't have electricity. That means, What does it mean when you don't have electricity?
No TV.
No, yeah, no electric bills. Exactly. Even they had oil. They weren't just struggling along. They did everything. And perhaps they had a cow. I don't think they did have a cow, actually. But it's simpler. The mind can actually relax and be peaceful. And I know from personal experience what happens to the mind when you're staring at the computer screen all day long. Your mind is so full of vata that it's uncontrollable, practically speaking, and confused and disturbed, actually speaking. Except, of course, if you are doing it in the service of Vrindavanava, then... But really, it's difficult. It's difficult. This modern life, we should become convinced, the modern life that we live, that we're so caught up in, that we have no freedom to get off it, even if we want to, off the treadmill of modern civilization. It is not an advancement. And we should become convinced of this. It is not advancement. It is killing the spirit of mankind. It is killing the spirit of, and what to speak of the vision of that there is an ultimate goal in life. In Australia, there's a different ultimate goal in life than in the United States and in India. In Australia, it's to get a caravan, yes, and just travel around. And your house is, and just travel around, and just travel around, and not have any anxieties. But of course, when petrol is this expensive, and then the United States, when it's to move to a warmer part of the United States, that's what the older people do. And in India, the tendency on the material level is, on the material level, just to be surrounded by your children and grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren and great-great-great-grandchildren. It's funny, in different cultures there's different goals, but actually all of these, there's differing degrees of piety, but all of these are nonsensical. Probably one of my favorite little stories is there's one devotee who comes from a very pious devotee family in Sindhi, a Sindhi Brahmana. And his great-grandmother was a widow, and all day, and she would just read the Bhagavatam, or Bhagavad Gita especially. And in those days, before the partition of India, she would go to the river to bathe every morning, and she would come back, and then she would read the Bhagavad Gita. She knew it by heart, but she always kept the book open in front of her. And his uncle asked her why. He was a little boy at that time. Why do you know the book by heart? Why do you keep it, the book in front of you, open? You know all the verses. And she said, because I have eyes and I want to engage my eyes in seeing something in relationship to Krishna. This is the old culture. This is culture. And then there came one day, she went to the river and she came back and she said, I want you to place some cloth, white cloth, on the ground, she told her family members, and I'm going to lie down on that cloth, and I want everyone to come around me and chant Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam. Because somehow she knew it was time for her to leave. And she had a very clear understanding of what her param gatim was, what her goal was. Mm-hmm. And then everyone, all her family members, understood that it was that what she was doing. It was time for her to leave. And there was one of her grandsons, who was maybe the age of Aditya. He had a very, very close relationship with his grandmother. So what do you think he began to do? He began to cry. He was just a little boy. He began to cry. And she was so fixed. She said, "Take him away now. Because if I love him so much, if he's crying when I'm leaving this world, my consciousness is going to be on him and feeling so bad. Oh, I'm leaving. I'm causing this beloved grandson of my mind pain." Because that's the last thing you want to do. And it's what you have to do, ultimately. The people you love, you'll cause pain. Because you'll leave. So he said, "Take him away immediately. Because my heart will go to him when I'm leaving this world. Because he's crying. And then I'll have to take another birth." This is fixed. This is not sentiment. This is fixedness in knowing what the goal is and being so, having so much power of consciousness, so much shakti. There's one thing of, we were talking about this point yesterday. There is knowing, it's one thing, and then having the power to act on what you know is another, and they're completely different things. So she had the power, the knowledge and the power. She knew what the ultimate goal was, and she was surrendered to her the actual purpose of her life. Now this is a lesson for all of us. So, siddha gyatvat mano gatim. They worshipped and they were perfectly satisfied after hearing these prayers because they could clearly understand the ultimate goal and therefore they were ready to act on it. So I'll read the translation now. The Supreme Lord Sri Narayan Rishi said, having heard these instructions about the Supreme Self, the Personality of Godhead, the sons of Brahma, now understood their final destination. It was not karma. It was not jnana. It was not yoga. It was through bhakti, awakening the relationship with the supreme, unlimited, inconceivably potent person. They understood their final destination and they were powerful and they were going to act on it and they were going to get the results too. They felt perfectly satisfied because if you don't know where you're going, you're not going to feel satisfied. It's a very disturbing situation. Has anyone ever had a dream where they just kept getting lost and lost and lost and they couldn't even figure out where they're going? I've had that one. Only me and Uddhava and I. Just get lost, and the more you try to find where you're trying to go, it's so confusing, so disturbing. And you're so happy when you wake up. Because it's so disturbing to be lost, to not know your destination and not being able to get there. So they were satisfied. Because they knew where they were going. They were perfectly satisfied and therefore they honored Sanandana with their worship. They worshipped him because he gave them knowledge about what the ultimate goal was so that they were no longer just Brahmanda Brahmate, wandering, not searching from one situation to the next situation, seeking the promise of happiness. But not being able to gain any happiness at all. So please repeat. The Supreme Lord,
Supreme Lord,
Sri Narayan Rishi,
Sri Narayan Rishi,
said,
having heard these instructions about the Supreme Self,
the Personality of Godhead, the sons of Brahma,
now understood their final destination. they felt perfectly satisfied and honored Sanandana with their worship. Here is the very short purport. Listen carefully, and I will ask after what you remember, what struck you. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that Atma Anushasanam, which means in the word by words, does anyone remember what Anushasanam means?
Instructions,
as opposed to destructions. Which is happens when you get bad instructions, you get destructions. You like that one, Uddhava?
Yeah.
You can have it. It's all right. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that Atma Anusasanam, that instructions about the soul, the self, can be understood both as instructions given to benefit the jiva souls and as instructions about the living entity's relationship with the foundation of all existence. Please consider what that means, the foundation of all existence. Are there any structural engineers? Similarly, Atmanogati means both the destination of the jiva soul and the means of reaching the supreme soul. By hearing the 28 prayers of the personified Vedas, which comprise the elucidation of the Brahmopanishad spoken at the beginning of this chapter, the sages assembled in Brahmaloka made great progress towards their goal of pure love of God. What do you remember? Anything strike you? Excuse me? Yes, the second verse, the first verse in the prayers. It seems to be a sum of it, summation of it. Which it's an interesting verse. Perhaps we'll read it after. Anyone else get struck?
It's very similar to what we are studying in the third canto in the Bhakti Vaibhava class now. How Kapila Muni gave this instruction to Devavati, the foundation for Atma Darshan, Sankhya Yoga. And then she understood what is the purpose of, what is the final destination.
Thank you. Nice. So interesting. Have you read the final chapter yet?
Oh, third canto?
Yeah.
No, not the final.
Okay. Thank you. Any other one remember anything or anything? Anyone get struck? Catch one's attention? Yes. And the last line was, they made great progress towards their goal of pure love of God. They understood that that was the goal. And not only did they hear, they understood. And not only did they understand, they acted. And not only did they understand and act, they made progress. Because if one hears properly and acts properly, one naturally will make progress towards the goal of prema pumarto mahan, of love for Krishna, love for Krishna. This is the goal. And if one somehow attains this goal, any external of one's life is insignificant. And therefore the great devotees, they can be heaven or hell, it doesn't make any difference to them because their conscience is right. What's the verse? Narayano parak sarve nakutastena bibhyate. No place is fearful. Swaga apavaga narakeshu apito yarta darshana. Do you know that comes in the fourth canto? No, yes, sixth canto. Sixth canto, when Lord Shiva, he's sitting with Parvati, and who goes? Chitraketu in the form of a Vidyadhara. He's in an aeroplane, and he sees Lord Shiva sitting with Parvati in an intimate way, and he says something of criticism. saying that this isn't a good example. And then Parvati becomes angry. Who do you think you are that you're going to criticize Lord Shiva? You're flying in your aeroplane? You're going to criticize Lord Shiva, who's such an exalted, most exalted person? And she curses him. She curses him to become an asura, a demon. And he says, and he could retaliate if he wanted to. Oh, you've so many times in the Vedic literatures, or even when someone gets angry at us, what do? We tend to do, we get angry back. Who are you to get angry at me? You'll soon understand who I am. But he just said, okay, actually I didn't do anything wrong. But okay, if you curse me in this way, I'll accept it. And he became an asura. What was his name?
Vitrasura.
And Parvati was amazed that he just accepted it. And Lord Shiva said, now you understand the mistake you had made? Now do you understand the qualities of the devotees of the Lord? And he said that verse, Swarga Pavaga. They don't care for liberation, for heaven or narak, for hell. Apituyarta darshana. Just think about what kind of consciousness you have to have, that you don't care how you're living externally, if you're in a sweet, wonderful situation, or a very poor, horrible, suffering situation. It doesn't touch you. You're so fixed. And how satisfied you have to be feeling. Just think of what that means. How much satisfaction that you would have to be that tolerant. And where can such a level of satisfaction come from? Narayana Paraksabe. Having one's relationship with Krishna awake in one's heart. It brings so much satisfaction to the soul, to ourselves, that anything external of that appears insignificant. Just like a fly landing on an elephant. He doesn't complain, he doesn't get angry. Why? If a fly lands on an elephant, why doesn't the elephant complain and get angry? Doesn't even know it's there. Yeah? He doesn't care. How dare you come on me? I am an elephant. No, you're so insignificant, it's not even worth my notice. He doesn't even think. So that's how an exalted devotee who is awake, living in his relationship with Krishna, deals with the material world. He sees it as insignificant because he's so fixed in his serving relationship with Krishna. He's so ecstatic in his chanting and hearing and dancing. He dances and dances, not caring for outsiders. There's that... I can't remember the verse, unfortunately. But where is it? It's in the fifth chapter of Adi Lila. Could someone get that for me? Of Adi Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Very interesting. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu meets it's the Panchatattva. The one word describes the Panchatattva. So it's not the maybe not the fifth chapter, but the one that describes the Panchatattva. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he goes and meets the Mayavadi sannyasis. In Benares. Even today, Benares is full of impersonalists. It's the impersonal capital of India, of the world. And Mahaprabhu didn't want to associate with them, but he had a plan. And he inspired one Brahmana to invite him to take prasadam. So when Mahaprabhu went in, what was the leader of the impersonalist name? Prakashanand. And he went there, and he sat outside, and he exhibited an effulgence that was so bright that all, even though he was sitting in the place used for washing the feet, everyone was completely attracted to his charismatic presence. And they say to each other, when the Mayavadis see each other, they say, Namo Narayan, you are the Supreme Lord. But no one can exhibit an effulgence like the Lord. So he was actually doing it. So Prakasananda, he reached out his hand to him and said, because Mahaprabhu was so young at that time. He was under 30. And he was very, very beautiful. And Prakasananda was the leader in the senior sannyasi of all the Mayavadis. And he said to him, please, O Sripad, O Your Holiness, please, why are you sitting outside in a dirty place? Please come inside. Please come and sit with us. So he was attracted and he brought Mahaprabhu inside and said, you appear to be as effulgent as Lord Narayan himself. But what are your practices? What is your sadhana? You are performing the wrong sadhana. He was saying, you should be studying Vedanta. Why don't you study Vedanta? Instead of studying Vedanta, you're singing and dancing. It's just sentimental activity. In the company of other sentimentalists, you're just, this is not the proper actions for a sannyasi. You should be studying Vedanta. So Mahaprabhu replied to the question, why aren't you studying Vedanta? He replied that his spiritual master told him, Toma nahika Vedanta arika. You don't have the qualification to study Vedanta. Krishna mantra japa sada. A mantra sar. This mantra, you always just chant the Krishna mantra. Japa. Krishna, Krishna. So Mahaprabhu said, my Guru Maharaj told me to always chant of Krishna's holy names. Because this mantra is the sar. What does sar mean? It also means cream. It's the same. It's the essence of milk is its cream. What is the essence of milk?
Cream.
Very good. Do you like cream? Do you like the essence of milk? Yes. Did you know that when Krishna was stealing butter, Mother Yasoda thought, oh my boy, the milk products and the butter and everything that we give him, he doesn't like it. And therefore that's the reason why he's going to the houses of others to steal butter. So out of their thousands, 600,000 cows that were under the care of Nanda Maharaj, she found the best 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 cows that gave the most tasty milk. And she let them eat the tastiest grass so that they would give the best milk. And she would churn that milk into butter and feed it to Krishna. And you know what sometimes she would mix the butter with? With misri. Did you ever have that? Makan misri? No? You know what it is? It's sugar. Little lumps of sugar. It's so good. No one understands my Brooklyn Sanskrit. What to do? So anyway, aside from that, so Mahaprabhu began describing what happened to him when he began to chant the Maha Mantra. And then he began to feel ecstatic and roll on the ground and stand up and fall down to the ground and crying and hair standing on end just by chanting. Because by chanting, if we chant without offenses, we actually come in touch with Krishna. And the result of coming in touch with Krishna is ecstatic, it's love. So he went to, Mahaprabhu was describing to Prakasananda why he doesn't study Vedanta and why he chants. So he went, so Mahaprabhu was describing how he went to his spiritual master and he said, what kind of mantra you've given me? The effect that I'm feeling of this mantra has made me mad. I'm crying, I'm dancing, I'm falling to the ground. What kind of mantra is this? Have I done something wrong? And Sripad Iswara Puri, his Guru Maharaj Mahaprabhu, he said, very good. He smiled and said, very good, my dear boy. You have achieved the actual result. This ecstatic love is the result. I don't think it's in here. It's not in this one. But then Mahaprabhu said the previous one. Mahaprabhu said, and then he taught me a verse. And there's one verse he quotes there saying, Hareo Nama, Hareo Nama, Hareo Nama, Eva Kebalam, Kaloa Nasteva, 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 Gatyanyata. He said, you wear this verse like a garland around your neck. But then he said, he taught me another verse, which he said was the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I don't know it, but you should learn it. It's an ecstatic verse about the Panchatattva. Expansions of Nityananda. Yes, Lord Chaitanya in five features. Yes. Let's see if I can find it. Saying this, he said, Nacho Gao Bhakti Sange Kara Sankirtana Krishna Nama Upadeshi Tara Sarvagyana. My dear child, continue dancing, continue chanting, continue performing Sankirtan in association with devotees. Furthermore, go out and preach the value of chanting Krishna Nama. For by this process, you will be able to deliver all fallen souls. Saying this, my spiritual master taught me one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the essence of all the Bhagavatam's instructions. Therefore, he instructed me this verse again and again. Would you like to hear what it is? Are you sure? Okay. Evam vrata svapriyanam kirtya jatanurago druta chittu chai asatyato rodita rauti gayati unmadavan rityati lokabaya. Now listen to what it is. This is what the personified Vedas were making progress to. This verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. When a person, it doesn't give a citation of it. When a person is actually advanced and takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord, who is very dear to that person, very dear to him, he is agitated. This is advanced Krishna consciousness. When one chants the names of the Lord, who is actually dear to him, is Priya, so dear to him, he becomes agitated, disturbed inside, and he loudly chants the holy name. Now I think I should loudly chant the holy name. But this is the effect, the natural effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord when one is infected with prema bhakti. And then he is agitated and loudly chants the holy name. He also laughs, cries, becomes agitated and chants just like a madman, not caring for others, for outsiders. He doesn't care what's going on outside in this insignificant material world in which the universes, all the universes, are floating within Krishna like specks of dust. He's awake to who he is in relationship with Krishna. He's alive to that. And he's in ecstatic continuously by associating with Krishna and his holy names. And he's dancing and crying, and Mahaprabhu had achieved this state, which is the essence of the Bhagavatam. And he said, keep on chanting in this way, keep on experiencing your love for Krishna. Don't care for outsiders. We saw this in Prabhupada. He just didn't care. He was not intimidated by outsiders, what they thought, because he was so fixed in his relationship with Krishna. So fixed. Like that, even in Australia, when Prabhupada came, and he came and they picked him up in a Rolls Royce, such an expensive car. People usually think that sadhus have to be poverty stricken to be real. And they tried to intimidate Prabhupada. Reporters, oh, you got picked up in a Rolls Royce. Why? And Prabhupada's words were something to the effect of, because they did not have a gold car. So they had to settle for something less. And in Hong Kong also, Prabhupada was staying in the executive highest suite in the Hong Kong Hilton. It was a huge suite like that. And a reporter said, you speak about renunciation. And I mean, the biggest dignitaries, world dignitaries, would stay in that kind of the richest people would stay there. And the reporter at a press conference asked Prabhupada, you talk about renunciation and you're staying here. And Prabhupada started speaking philosophically to him about how everything is Krishna's and everything should be used in Krishna's service and the representative of God. And the reporter, he couldn't understand anything. And then finally Prabhupada thought, how can I explain this to him? And he said, for me, I don't care where I stay. But if I was living under a tree and I called a press conference, would you come? And the reporter said, oh, no. Yes, yes, very good. He didn't care. And there is another example of Prabhupada, and where Prabhupada learned this, that you focus on what Krishna wants you to do. Of course, until you really know how to act, you have to be careful. You can't think whatever you think in your mind is just what Krishna wants you to do. But once one is pure, then one really knows. And there's another example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When he sent his first disciples to the West, he said to attract the students to come, even if you have to serve meat, do it to make them come. Even if they won't come in any other way, you do it. And then one of his very exalted disciples said, but then the whole name of the institution, if we do things like that, the whole name of the institution will be ruined. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked at him and said, I also used to think like that 100 births ago. And we saw that so much exemplified in Prabhupada's mood with his book distribution and this and that and chanting loudly in public. He knew what Krishna wanted him to do. He was a general who knew what Krishna wanted him to do, to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And he didn't care. If he pleased Krishna, he didn't care about what anyone else thought, whoever that person would be. He didn't care. He knew what would be pleasing to Krishna. Again, we cannot imitate. But this is a similar thing to what Mahaprabhu was quoting his Guru Maharaj saying from the Bhagavatam. He becomes agitated, he cries, he laughs, he chants like a madman, not caring for outsiders. Let them think what they want. I don't care. I'm alive, I'm awake, in love for Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. If there's any questions or comments, I'll have another, just 4 minutes.
Would you like to tell us something about Loknath Goswami?
Loknath Goswami. He met Mahaprabhu one time. He was from a small village in Bangladesh, what is now Bangladesh, called Talktara. Have you been there? No, not yet. But he met, when Mahaprabhu traveled to East Bengal, before, when he was still young, and this was before he even started the Sankirtan movement, he met Loknath Goswami, and Loknath, Mahaprabhu told him to go to Vrindavan. He wanted to be with Mahaprabhu. He wanted to stay with Mahaprabhu. He finally met the goal of his life. He wanted to be with him, and Mahaprabhu told him to go to Vrindavan. And he went to Vrindavan. But he was always thinking, how can I be with Mahaprabhu? Mahaprabhu said, I'll come to Vrindavan. And then, after Mahaprabhu took sannyas, Loknath Goswami heard that Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas and he traveled in South India. He was traveling in South India, that wonderful place. And immediately, Loknath Maharaj, he left Vrindavan to find Mahaprabhu. And he traveled in South India looking for Mahaprabhu. And then, when he was in South India, he heard that Mahaprabhu had returned back to Jagannath Puri and then gone to Vrindavan. And he was in South India. So he went back to Vrindavan, but Mahaprabhu only stayed in Vrindavan less than a month. And he didn't see Mahaprabhu. Like that. So his whole life was immersed in separation from Mahaprabhu and from Krishna. And he would wander around the Vrindavan, and he was in one place called Kadirvan. Have you been to Kadirvan? On the road from Chatikara Road to Radhakund. Kadirvan is on the right hand side. And there, I don't remember the exact story, but he was longing to worship a deity of Krishna. And do you know what Krishna did? What do you think Krishna did? He came to him in the form of a deity. He was doing bhajan there, and Krishna came to him. What was that deity's name? Gokulananda. The bliss of Gokul. And Loknath Goswami used to carry him in like around his neck everywhere he went. wasn't a deity that was this big, but he was like that, perhaps. And he would carry Gokulananda with him wherever he went. And have you been to the Gokulananda temple in Vrindavan? When will you go? This year? Maybe. You might be too busy. If you have time. Okay. And then you should go and see Radha Gokulananda temple. So wonderful. And Lokanath Goswami's Samadhi Mandir is there. And you can offer your obeisances and pray for the blessings of Lokanath Goswami, who had a great disciple whose name was Narottama Das Thakur. And Narottama Das Thakur served him so nicely. And he wouldn't accept any other disciples. When Narottama Das Thakur first approached him, he said, "No, I have not been able to serve Mahaprabhu. How can I accept?" But then he understood gradually that Narottam, that this was the desire of Mahaprabhu, so he accepted Narottama Das. And he is a resident. Did you know that Lokanath Das Goswami is a resident of Golok, Vrindavan? He was an eternal associate. And do you know what his name was? He was a little girl who served a servant of Srimati Radharani. Did you know that? Name was Manjulali. Any other question? Raise your hand if you've been to Radha Gokulananda temple in Vrindavan. So few devotees. Next year, I hope when I come, I can say that again. Raise your hand if you've been to Radha Gokulananda temple. And then everyone will raise their hand because you've been. Raise your hand if you'd like to see Radha Gokulananda temple. Yes. Such a nice place. There is also a samadhi, like a Nam Samadhi of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, of Narottama Das Thakur, of Ganga Narayan Chakravarti, and another disciple of in the line of Narottama Das Thakur. Very wonderful place. But if you go there, be very careful of your chasma and your shoes also.
Monkeys.
They will take your glasses. Raise your hand if monkeys have taken your glasses in Vrindavan at some point or another. Huh? There? Where?
In the Samadhi area. They tried.
Fought them off single-handedly. Raise your hand again if monkeys have stolen your glasses at some time. Even Mahatma?
Three times.
One time in Loy Bazaar, I went to the people who sell glasses, and I saw them training the monkeys how to steal glasses, giving them bananas. You take them and give them my card. No, that's still only. So be very careful, and also your shoes. They will take your shoes. And you know what they will do with your shoes? And you know what they'll do with your glasses? Raise your hand if you've seen a t-shirt that said, "I lost my heart in Vrindavan." They have those t-shirts. But I think they should make a new t-shirt with a monkey picture on the back. "I lost my glasses in Vrindavan." Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. C.C. Radhabalava Nittai Gaur Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.